Good evening, everyone. Happy to have your association. And, this evening we will speak Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. The contents of the Gita summarized, and we will discuss text 11 this evening. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So Lord Krishna has just accepted Arjuna as his disciple, and now he's going to give the first instruction. So please repeat. Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha.
Ashoshanam Vacho Chantam.
Ashoshanam Vacho Chantam.
Prakhya Vadam Sabhashase.
Prakhya Vadam Sabhashase.
Katasun Agatasum Cha.
Katasun Agatasum Cha.
Nano Cho Chanti Pandita. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashoshanam Vacho Chantvam.
Ashoshanam Vacho Chantvam.
Prakhyavadam Sabhasase.
Prakhyavadam Sabhasase.
Gatasunagatasam
Cha. Gatasunagatasam
Cha. Nanucho Chanti Pandita.
Nanucho Chanti Pandita.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashoshan Ambacho Chastvam.
Ashoshan Ambacho Chastvam.
Prakhyavadam Sabhasase.
Prakhyavadam Sabhasase.
Katasan Agatachum Cha.
Katasan Agatachum Cha.
Nano Chachanti Pandita.
Nano Chachanti Pandita.
I want to repeat. Ashoshanam Vacho Chastvam. Prakhyavadam Sabhasate. Katasunagatasum Cha. Nano Chachanti Pandita.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashoshan Anvasho Chastvam.
Ashoshan Vacho Chastvam.
Pragyavadam Sabhashase.
Pragyavadam Sabhashase.
Gatasun Agatasuncha.
Gatasun Agatasuncha.
Nanusho Chanti Pandita.
Nanusho Chanti Pandita. Yes,
someone else.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashoshan Anvasho Shastram.
Ashoshan Vacho Shastram.
Prakhyavadam Sabhashase.
Prakhyavadam Sabhashase.
Katasunagatasumcha.
Katasunagatasumcha.
Nano Shoshanti Panditaha.
Nano Shoshanti Panditaha. Keshpan? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
The personality of God, it said. Associan. Not worthy of lamentation.
Not worthy of lamentation.
Anvachocha.
Anvachocha.
You are lamenting.
You are lamenting.
Tvam.
You.
Prakhyavadam.
Learned
talks.
Cha.
Also.
Basase.
Speaking.
Gata.
Lost.
Asun.
Life.
Agata.
Not past.
Asun.
Life.
Cha.
Also.
Na.
Never.
Anasoshanti.
Lament.
Pandita,
the learned. Translation and purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Purport. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. The Lord said, "You are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what his body and what his soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition." As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit, and the control of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology, but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Shosham Umbachosham Tvam Prahyavadam Sabhasasi Ratasun Aratasun Sa Nanu Shashanti Pandita. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "By speaking learned words, we are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead." So now I will read the comments first of Purnachandra Maharaj and then from Burijan Prabhu. I compiled this from their Bhakti Shastri class on this text. But mostly they refer to commentaries from Baladev Vidya Bhusan and Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur. Immediately the Guru chastised the disciple by giving a little verbal slap to Arjuna, calling him indirectly a fool, because he is lamenting for something that is not lamentable. And he says, although Prahyavadam Sabhasasi, speaking like a learned person, actually a real pandit, a learned person, Nanu Shoshanti, they don't become full of lamentation in such a circumstance. Katasan Agatasam Cha, whether the prana has left the body or whether it is not left, he sees that this is not any cause for socha, for lamentation. So although speaking very learned words, factually learned persons, they do not give grief as you are grieving. They do not grieve as you are grieving. Arjuna, for you are a fool. Krishna is telling Arjuna, in four you told that Dharma Shastra is higher than Artha Shastra. But now I'm telling you that Jnana Shastra is even higher than Dharma Shastra. So please hear. So Krishna is referring to the spirit soul, because only by understanding Atma Tattva can Arjuna transcend the lamentation and false compassion for his bodily relatives. If you understand that they are eternal and that they can never be killed, that they are going to get a new body, which will be refreshing for them, then there is no reason to lament. So Krishna immediately sets this stage for speaking the next few verses by just stating that the state of living or death is not a basis for lamentation for a learned person, for a pandit. It means that Bhishma is also an Atma or spirit soul who has gross and subtle bodies that are covering his Atma, Since the Atma is eternal and Bhishma is also an Atma, a soul, so it is improper to lament for the soul because it is eternal. It can never be killed. That is the whole gist of this section. So 11 is like a prelude leading to the next verse, where it describes about more about the individual soul. Next. One should not lament about these things, that are not worthy of being lamented about. Pahya vadam sabhasasi. We are speaking as you are a learned scholar. But learned scholars with knowledge do not lament about the things you are lamenting about. By gatasan agatasan cha. Neither for one who is alive, when the soul is in the body, or when the soul has left the body, which is called death. Nanu chochanti pandita. There is no reason to lament in either case, in life or in death, because the soul, you and me, everyone, we the people who is in the body, are eternal. Krishna says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. That means the body. Those who are wise do not lament neither for the living nor the dead. The first thing is that Krishna slaps Arjuna again. You are speaking as you are a learned man. But learned people would never say the words that are coming from your mouth. In other words, you are a fool. Intelligent people don't speak the way you are speaking, because you have made so many discriminations. You have made so many logical reasons for fighting or not fighting, but you have forgotten the basic principle of reality, and that is the soul. It is not the body that is important, it is the soul. Then next verse, 12. So, this is the first instruction Krishna gives to Arjuna, that he calls him a fool, because before he has argued using different elements, different arguments. He brings five arguments for not fighting. He says yes. His first argument is compassion. I want to be compassionate for my relatives. And he gives another reason. No enjoyment. I will get the opposite from what I desire. And then another reason given, he says we will get sinful reactions for doing that. Then he's arguing like a learned man, he says. Artha Shastra says, that you can kill aggressors. That there is no sin in killing aggressors. But Dharma Shastra is ire, he argues. Dharma Shastra says, when you kill your relatives, you will incur sin. So that is his argument. And if we kill everyone, then there will be so many widows, and there will be mingling of castes, and there will be degradation of womanhood, that there will be Varna Sankara, useless progeny, that it continues like that in the second chapter. But despite all his reasoning, he could not solve his problem. The only thing what happened is lamentation increased in the beginning of the second chapter. Tears are coming from his eyes, and he put his bow down. His bow that he vowed never to put down. That So, of course, in the beginning of the second chapter, Arjuna was thinking, when I feel compassion, I'm a good person. By showing compassion for others, by being non-violent in the society today, they would think, yeah, that's a nice person. Maybe he's a Buddhist or something. Non-violence. But Krishna was not impressed. Immediately he uses very, very heavy words. Words you normally do not use for a chatter. This Duskalam, he says, where is this dirtiness coming in your heart? From where is it coming? You are a non-Aryan. An Aryan knows what the values of life are. That's God. He knows the difference between spirit and soul. Cast away this kalibyam, this impotence, Krishna says. That to call a kshatriya impotent, that's heavy. But then it continues arguing and says, how can I kill my guru? It's like, yeah, I think that Baladev Vidyabhusan puts between the lines, says, what you say to Krishna, yeah, would you kill your guru, Sandipani Muni? How can I kill my grandfather? He raised me. I was sitting on his lap. He was caring for me. He raised me because my father Pandu, died at a very early age. It's the beginning of the Mahabharata. We have that story of Pandu. So, because he thinks, even when I win an unrivaled kingdom, that then I will not be able to enjoy. Because all with those with whom I want to enjoy it will be gone. Again, that point of enjoyment. When I lose, I die. So he says it's a lose-lose option. Krishna turns it into a win-win option. He says, when you fight and you get the kingdom, you will enjoy that. You will enjoy the kingdom. And when you die, you go to the heavenly planets. You will also enjoy. But still, Arjuna is not satisfied. He sees he cannot come out of this lamentation. He lost the strength to fight thinking. When I fight, I lose everything. It's better to be a beggar. It's better. They kill me unarmed. That's a whole crisis. Of course, we may not forget that Arjuna is in a very, very special position. Because Arjuna, that appears already in the middle of the first chapter. Because there, in a purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Arjuna's compassion is because he's a pure devotee. pure devotee feels this compassion. It's because of being a pure devotee. In the next purport says, Srila Prabhupada says, Arjuna's compassion is due to illusion. It's influenced by the illusory energy. So in one purport he says he's a pure devotee, and in the next purport he says, no, it's false compassion, it's due to illusion. How can we explain that? It's because we are in this material world, we are all under the influence of the three modes of nature, and that's Maya, three modes. And by the three modes, we forget Krishna completely in illusion. Krishna complains about that in Bhagavad Gita, in many verses. Says in 7:13, he says, I'm above the three modes, goodness, passion and ignorance. And in this world, no one knows me. So that's the influence of these three modes. One forgets Krishna. That's the illusion. If we forget Krishna, we forget ourselves. Because we are a part and parcel of Krishna. You can only know who you are when you know Krishna. Because we are of the same transcendental quality, the soul and Krishna. But our quantity is different. But Arjuna is not under Mahamaya. Because he's a pure devotee. He assists Krishna from universe to universe. So that he facilitates the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita in every universe. That's his eternal service. So he's a pure devotee. But Krishna must bring him into illusion so that he asks the right questions so that Krishna can speak Bhagavad Gita. So he's under Yoga Maya. And this Yoga Maya let them forget this transcendental knowledge and brings him to an illusion and make him speak all these words, and this he comes in that state of lamentation. But that's under influence of Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya. So therefore this Yoga Maya lets him act sometimes in very strange ways. Like in the fourth chapter, and that's very interesting. In the fourth chapter, Krishna speaks in Man Vishvasvate Yogam Pagtam Am Apiyam. That's Vivasvan. Vishvasvan Manave Praha. Manur Iksva Ku Manur what's the second? Manur Iksva Brave Bhavit. Yeah. So Krishna says, I spoke this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god. Sun god spoke it to Vivasvan, spoke it to Sun Iksvaku, Iksvaku spoke it to Manu. And that was 120 million years ago that Krishna spoke this to the sun god. Ivan Paprapaptam Imam Rachasyovitu Sakalni Mata Yoga Nastapandapa. And I speak it again to you, Arjuna, because this knowledge came down to the disciplic succession. And I speak it to you because you are my friend and my devotee, so you can understand it. But then Arjuna objects and says, how is that possible? 120 million years ago you spoke it to Vivasvan. We took birth together. So that's again this yoga maya. Because after this first, Krishna has to speak about himself. Paladev Vidya Bhushan says, a gentleman never speaks about himself. So he makes Arjuna ask this question so that he can speak about himself and explain that he's the unborn who takes birth. His body never deteriorates. And is appearing by his Atma Maya, his eternal energy. So there you also see that game of this Yoga Maya. In reality, Krishna determines through this Yoga Maya, his spiritual energy, Arjuna's mind. But he plays the role of conditioned souls to teach us this lamentation, because that was Arjuna's problem. He could not solve his problem and he became depressed, started to lament. So by that we can understand the cause of depression is the mode of ignorance. It's lamenting. Lamentation. But a learned man, he does not lament, neither for the living nor for the dead. But that's quite a high realization. Understanding that I'm a spirit soul. This is the first lesson in the ABC of spiritual life. Understanding what is valuable in one's life, what's not valuable. It's the first thing we have to understand, but just understanding that is not very helpful. That transcendental knowledge, which remains on the theoretical platform, it's useless. We have to bring it into practice. When one can hear I'm not a body, and even intellectually become convinced, but you go out and you act again as a body. This lamentation is the bodily platform. But that has a very deep meaning. Because to realize that one has to learn, when it's a spirit soul, when it's an eternal living being, but one has to learn to act as a spiritual being and not as the body. So one must come to a level of consciousness where one identifies with one's real self. One must learn to discriminate what's the false self and what's the real self. And that Krishna will speak Bhagavad Gita here and gives us different processes to realize that. He gives a slow process that goes over many lives mode, and he gives a direct process. The direct process is confidential. That's the the middle six parts of the Bhagavad Gita. It's about bhakti. That's a direct process. But it speaks first about this gradual step-by-step process that one may say, why does Krishna do that? That why not direct coming to the point? Sarva dharmam pricya mamakam saram vacham tvam sarva pavayo maksis yasmi macho, just surrender to me. We would have a smaller Bhagavad Gita. And then direct come to the essence by explaining that there are different kinds of people and they are under different kinds of modes and they have different conceptions of life and they are attached to certain conceptions of life and Krishna wants to give everyone an opportunity to make spiritual advancement on whatever level they are. To come to the level of bhakti is quite a high level. That's normally first to realize that one not is the body, one performs jnana yoga. Sankhya Yoga, trying to understand the difference between matter and spirit. That, of even before that, Krishna starts with, in the Bhagavad Gita, with explaining karma kanda. Those who want the fruits of their actions and want to enjoy. In the second chapter, Krishna speaks about, and also in the third chapter, of the cycle of sacrifice, worship of the devas, going to the heavenly planets. Then your pious deeds are exhausted, and you come back. But Krishna then says to Arjuna, "Don't be attached to the flowery words of the Vedas." Transcend these modes of nature, so he condemns it. Don't do that, Krishna says. And then he speaks about, because here Krishna goes directly with this verse in Jnana Yoga. Jnana. It goes up till text 40 nearly. Jnana. Trying to understand the difference between matter and spirit, who I am. That's Jnana Yoga. But mostly, there's a stage between this Karma Kanda and Jnana Yoga. Because to study Vedanta, and one must practically be on the liberated platform to understand that. If the heart is full with tendency for enjoyment, like in the Jnana schools and the yoga schools, Ashtanga Yoga, these schools accept only celibates, no married people. You have to follow the yoga practice very strictly. But one cannot come to that directly, this platform of sense control. Therefore, Krishna gives Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is action and inner renounced spirit. That Karma, Ivatakaristi, Mahapalishana, Kachna. You have to do your duty. But one should not, you are not entitled to the fruits of one's action. That Krishna gives the definition of yoga. Yoga stakor karmani sangam chyotva dhanjna. Siddha sitya samabhutva samadvam yoga uchati. Yoga, Krishna says, is equal, being equal in success or failure. Because success and failure is for the body, that not for the soul. That's Krishna consciousness, means acting for the pleasure of Krishna and understanding Krishna is the proprietor of everything and everything should be done for his service. I'm not the enjoyer. That's the knowledge. That's learning to act on the on the level of the spirit soul, and by trying to do that, one becomes purified in the heart, and one becomes purified of material desires. That's action in a renounced way, that purifies, and then one comes to the point that one understands, yes, I'm not his body, and one comes to Jnana and starts to study Vedanta, and understanding the difference between matter and spirit. It's a very difficult process. In the fifth chapter, Krishna says, Sanyasa tu mabo dukam aptama yogata. Yogi yukta manibrana nashrinad gachati. Krishna says there that this renunciation, it's dukkha, it's very troublesome, this renunciation. That because one who does yoga yukta, that's munir, yoga yukta munir brahma, that's a muni, a wise person who performs devotional service, he can easily attain perfection. That, so that renunciation is the jnana yogi, he has understood, I'm not working anymore because I'm not a body, so why should I work hard for the body? Yes, that's this realization. But it tries to cultivate knowledge and attachment. But that is incomplete. Because is the touch, is knowledge, is limited to understanding I'm spirit, I'm Brahman. It does not understand Krishna is the source of Brahman. It does not understand that this renunciation is an imagination. Because if you renounce something, then you think this is mine and I renounce it. But that's error. Nothing is ours. How can you renounce? You cannot renounce. Because everything belongs to Krishna and is for his service. So they try to detach themselves, and the devotee tries to attach himself to Krishna. And that's the same thing. But they don't get that point. But after many births trying to study, they come to understand that Krishna is the root of everything. That's a high understanding. Then they are going to water the root. The devotee has already accepted. But these are different stages. And because they don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the souls of Brahman, so they stay on this lower stage. It's knowledge of Krishna that elevates us, makes us to understand who we are. And this Dhyana Yoga is just a mechanistic process to elevate the mind. That so these processes are very difficult to understand, that one is not a body but a spirit soul. For the Jnana Yoga, Jnana Yogin may realize I am not this body, but that's the negative. The point is, who am I? What's my identity, my real identity? Is that of a servant of Krishna. And that's self-realization. There's a difference between attaining liberation and self-realization. And that, but it is the cause of lamentation, of depression, that because one identifies with the mind and with and the intelligence, which is misused. The intelligence is misused to use the mind to make plans for sense gratification, for the senses, for the mind and the senses. It's quite a complex system, how this subtle body works. But this, the beginning of knowledge here begins with this jnana. Jnana is very important in the beginning of our spiritual life. That in the third chapter, Krishna explains that to conquer this lust is the cause of our identifying with the body. To conquer it, one must regulate the senses. Regulating the senses means the mind must control the senses. But the mind must be directed by the intelligence. And what knowledge is that? Understanding that the difference between body and soul, and the intelligence should instruct the mind to act as a spirit soul and not as the body. And that's transcendental knowledge, is learning how to act as a spirit soul and not a body. Therefore this jnana is very important. Just by this knowledge, by this cultivating this knowledge, one comes out of depression. That one comes out of this lamentation. A few years ago I was in Malaga and was one devotee there. She lost her son. For a mother to lose a son, that's a very heavy thing. That's difficult to come out of such a depression. But what did she do? She started to listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures. From morning till the evening, everywhere she was hearing Srila Prabhupada. And she told me after 3 days I came completely out of this lamentation. That's the power of hearing Bhagavad Gita in this transcendental knowledge. That was that transcendental knowledge. If you know Bhagavad Gita and the principles explained in it, then you can direct your mind to act according to the instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. That even if we are not fully Krishna conscious, if we have this knowledge, we can instruct the mind to act on the spiritual platform. And it's a question to train the mind constantly to act as a spirit soul and not as the body. That Krishna explains, gives this chapter, because the last 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are all jnana. The first six chapters are mostly karma yoga, but also there are parts of jnana and dhyana and so on. That so this knowledge is very important. That's the first thing that makes Krishna consciousness unique. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that Arjuna thinks, politics, sociology, that knowledge, and it's very important. Rule and divide the Kshatriyas. But higher than that is the knowledge, the difference between spirit and soul. And that knowledge makes Krishna consciousness different than other religions, other so-called faiths, that because it makes it a science. That's the difference. It Bhagavad Gita is about Sanatan Dharma. That this Dharma, Srila Prabhupada said in English, it's in the dictionary, it's translated as a religion of faith. Srila Prabhupada said it's not faith. Faith can change. Today I'm Christian, then I become a Hindu or a Muslim. But Dharma does not change. That's the characteristic of real Dharma. It eternally does not change. Srila Prabhupada explained it's like water. Water has the quality of being wet. It's connected. You cannot disconnect. Water is always wet. So real religion has its characteristics, and these characteristics are explained here, that the first step is this transcendental knowledge. Then Krishna will further explain to bring this transcendental knowledge in practice. You need help of a spiritual master, because spiritual master has realized this knowledge. He knows how to bring it in practice, because he is bringing it, he's living it every moment. So this book knowledge will not help us. We have to learn to apply it in association of devotees. My Guru Maharaj, I said it a few times, it is a nice example. Guru Maharaj, when he came to the movement and he was reading Bhagavad Gita, at every page he was thinking, now I understand. I understand. And he was so fascinated. 2 days he read the whole Bhagavad Gita on the carpet. So fascinated. I say, now I understand. Then a few months later, he met Srila Prabhupada at the Kumbh Mela, January 1977, Bhakti Charamaj. He met Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. Anyway, it's a whole story. And because he wanted to see Srila Prabhupada and to meet him, but Srila Prabhupada was always protected by all these sannyasis, and he could not go to Srila Prabhupada. Now the servant said, a moment, Bhavananda Maharaj said, come with me. And they went in the tent of Srila Prabhupada, and he was directly sitting before Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture. That was the first lecture he heard of Srila Prabhupada. And then after that, Srila Prabhupada was leaving for Vrindavan. He took the train. And my Guru Maharaj was on the same train. And on the train, Bhavananda Maharaj said to him, come, you want to see Srila Prabhupada? And my Guru Maharaj said, yes, you come with me. And he went to the compartment where Srila Prabhupada was sitting. And he opened the compartment. And he pushed my Guru Maharaj inside. And there was Srila Prabhupada with two sannyasis, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Anyway. But when Srila Prabhupada saw him, Srila Prabhupada said, you come and sit here, just near to him. But he did not want to do that. he went to the other side, and the two sannyasis gave him some space. And there, Srila Prabhupada gave him the instruction that was the first thing he said to him: you translate the Bhagavatam in Bengali. And it took him many years until 96 the centennial. Then I was there in Mayapur when he finished it, that project. But then he became Srila Prabhupada's personal servant and Indian secretary. And after serving Srila Prabhupada for 3 months, his conclusion was, I did not understand anything from Bhagavad Gita. Because he was seeing how the Bhagavad Gita was lived, and understand I still have a way to go. So that's the practice of Bhagavad Gita. That's very important. That Srila Prabhupada was never impressed when someone had memorized the Bhagavad Gita. It's nice, like the Gurukulis, where young Gurukulis were reciting verses before Srila Prabhupada in Sanskrit. And then Srila Prabhupada asked one of the Guru boys, what does it mean? And they could not answer. They had memorized, but did not know what the meaning was. We have not only to know the meaning, but also how to bring the practical value of it. So therefore, this first instruction of Krishna to Arjuna is very important, that we have to understand in the beginning of our spiritual life that we are big fools, rascals, who are identifying with the body. That and a disciple fools thinks himself always a fool before the spiritual master. And that is the etiquette, that we remain always a fool. It goes together with, yes, I just mentioned that that's a very actual point, that this etiquette of seeing oneself a fool before the spiritual master. A thing that has misunderstood many times is that Srila Prabhupada giving Ritvik initiations, why did that happen? Because it's not the etiquette that the disciple gives initiation when the spiritual master is present. Because the disciple feels himself always a fool in the presence of the spiritual master. It's just not the etiquette. We see that in the Bhagavatam, that when Vidura wanted to take initiation from Uddhav, who was more advanced than Maitreya, but Maitreya was senior. And he didn't want to make that offense of, in the presence of someone senior, to give initiation. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada instituted its Ritvik system. You initiate, because I cannot physically do it, but they become my disciple until he passes away. When the spiritual master passes away, then the spiritual master can give initiation. It continues, but it's because of this etiquette that feeling oneself, thinking oneself as a fool in the presence of the spiritual master. datta. Of course, this is a big, big discussion in the TBC body now. But that's a main principle of why, that's a main argument why disciples should not give initiation while the spiritual master is alive. That's a main principle that because the disciple should never take that position. If one thinks oneself a spiritual master, then one is not a spiritual master. A spiritual master means I'm just the disciple of my Guru Maharaj, and I will instruct someone as a service to my Guru Maharaj, but one thinks never oneself to be a guru. And that but there have been instances in history where the spiritual master instructs the disciple to initiate. They are there. You can read it in Jaiva Dharma. Very interesting. But that's very exceptional. So you have that very exceptional thing, and you have that basic etiquette and how to put it together in a society like ISKCON. A very important point, a very important discussion which is going on. That good, I would not tell that to a new public, but any comments or questions? Yes.
You know the last note that you're saying, but in ISKCON we find there are sannyasis who also have disciples who are sannyasis, and they're initiate disciples or about to initiate disciples. In that case, is it that they are initiating on behalf of their guru?
Well, that's just the point of discussion. If we follow what Srila Prabhupada did, then they should not give initiations. Then this Ritvik system that Srila Prabhupada followed could be implemented as a possibility, that they would, that if their spiritual master instructs, you give initiation on my behalf, but they become my disciples. But I don't see that really, because Srila Prabhupada, he was not physically able to do it. But that the sannyasis today, senior sannyasis, they are able to do it. So why should he instruct their disciple like that? Of course, this Ritvik has a bad connotation, because all what happened in the past, but that's the real Ritvik, but is misused by the, anyway, we know the story. something else? Yes?
Yes, in connection with that, this word itself, Ritvik, is a way it's implemented is totally incorrect, even grammatically, even in any way, because Ritvik simply means priest, assistant.
Yeah, good, yeah.
So I don't know how this came about, but in Tamil Krishna Goswami, kind of heard from someone who heard from someone, Ritvik Acharya,
right.
So just not connection, Prabhupada said yes, because Prabhupada didn't consider it, you know, he wasn't bothered with it.
Right, that's an important point.
So Ritvik is just kind of a word that nobody actually knows what it means.
Yeah.
You know, it just means priest, nothing else.
Yeah.
So I don't know how is that become like a household word.
Yeah, right.
Moment. It's very strange.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
That. Something else. Yeah. But was happy to be with you. That's a whole surprise to find you here. Thank you.